The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Joe Biden's popularity takes a nosedive. Are the American people, the sleeping giant, finally waking up? I'll reveal the latest shakedown scheme involving Hunter Biden and the big guy. What do we make of the results that have come out of Maricopa County, the audit? I'll give you my takeaway. And Regnery CEO Tom Spence joins me to talk about book banning in today's America. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
America needs this voice. The times are crazy. In a time of confusion, division, and lies, we need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
Joe Biden's popularity is in free fall. And I gotta say, I'm pretty happy about that. This guy's ratings are disintegrating faster than the neurons in his own brain. And this time, I don't think he's going to be able to save himself with his trademark yell, "Come on, man!" It's not going to work. Now, for the past several months, almost 9 months, I've been surveying the debris that the Biden administration has produced on all different fronts, in foreign policy, with the military, in Afghanistan, with Iran, domestically, with the border, one crisis on top of another, one disaster on top of another. And the question has always been, what do the American people make of all this? Are the American people okay with Biden's America, the Bidenization, as I've called it, of America? Or are people saying, hey, look, this is really not what we signed up for. Whatever our reservations about Trump, this kind of takedown of American exceptionalism, this takedown of America itself, we're not okay with it. Now, polls, as we know from previous experience, can be unreliable. And we've got to take them with a little bit of caution, with a kind of proverbial grain of salt. One of the better polls, however, is the Pew Research Center surveys, because these aren't polls which ask a kind of stacked question, but rather more in-depth, more granular kind of inquiries that get to details, but not just about what people think on the surface, but why they think that, what elements go into their decision. And the latest Pew Research survey, pretty detailed, is also pretty revealing. Now, Frank Luntz, the pollster, had a kind of summary of it, which kind of tells you the story. He goes, Biden's job approval was 55 to 43. So 55 approve, 43 disapprove. That's a plus 12 back in July. So only a few months ago. Now, it's 44-53. So that means 44 approve, 53 disapprove, minus 9. And then Luntz says, wow, that's a 21-point swing downward. Now, it's kind of rare to see a 20-point move in the polls in like 4 months. And this must be a sign, I think, that the American people are not just rising up, but literally jumping out of their bed, essentially saying, what the heck? What is going on in today's America? Now, Pew goes on to say, and I looked at the granular data they put out. It's a little bit detailed. I won't go into all of it, but they say that just way back in March, 2 months after Biden took office, clear majorities expressed confidence in him across 6 of 7 dimensions. They were kind of looking forward to this Biden business, particularly his handling of coronavirus. They say, but now majorities have little or no confidence in him in 4 of these same areas. So he's essentially lost a tremendous amount of ground. They also say positive evaluations of Biden's personal traits and characteristics have shown similar decreases. Now, admittedly, some of this is along partisan lines. But, says Pew, the decline in his public standing has come among members of both parties. So, yes, he's lost ground among Republicans, where he had very little ground to begin. But, interestingly, he's seen a sharp decline in his popularity, even among Democrats and independents. Only 26% of Americans think that the country is going in the right direction. Think about that. That's basically one quarter. About half of Americans, what's that?
What's wrong with
that? They'll be like, who are these people? What are their names? Now, the one issue in which Biden continues to hold ground, and as conservatives, we need to pay attention to this, is coronavirus. It's the only issue on which he's above 50%. Now, he's just at 51%, and that includes people who are not just confident, but even somewhat confident that he's going in the right direction. And Pew says even on that indicator, the one indicator where Biden's above 50, he's down from 65. He was at 65%. My favorite question, they're asking whether Biden is mentally sharp. Is he all there? And interestingly, there's been an 11% decline in people who think he's all there. But incredibly, 43% say, yeah, we think he's still there. Again, who are these 43%? I'd like to meet some. I'd like to know their mental condition. Yes, I think he's all there. I don't know who I am. I don't know my middle name. Sorry, nurse. Yes, I've taken my medication. But yes, Joe Biden makes complete sense to me. So all of this, I got to say, I'm laughing about it because, you know, normally people are conservatives and people sort of think like, oh, you know, I might not have voted for Biden, but I wish him well. I really hope that he's successful. Actually, I don't. This guy's a disaster. He's taking the country in the wrong direction. Why would I want him to be successful in taking the country down? I want to challenge you to become a MyPillow super shopper, like Debbie and me. We don't just patronize MyPillow. We go all out to support Mike Lindell, and we're happy to do it because he makes great products. Mike Lindell, the inventor and CEO of MyPillow, wants to make it easy for you to be a super shopper. How? By giving you some great deals. For example, Mike is offering a buy one, get one free on his Giza Dream Sheets. And he's also offering up to 66% off on a whole bunch of other products. All the MyPillow products, by the way, come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. Here's how you get them. Call 800-876-0227. That's 800-876-0227. Or just go to the website, mypillow.com. Now, to get the discounts, you got to do just one thing. Use promo code D-I-N-E-S-H, Dinesh. Do we really need to hear more about Hunter Biden? Yes, we do. You know why? Because it reveals, his dealings reveal the depth of corruption of the Biden family and specifically Joe Biden. So the very man in the White House has built a long career on one corrupt deal on top of another. And what makes us believe he's stopped now? Now, the latest Hunter Biden revelation comes from Business Insider. It's actually not directly based on the Hunter Biden laptop. Kind of a surprise, because that seems to be a kind of bottomless treasure trove of information. But Business Insider has obtained some emails that were sent by a large Democratic donor, a guy named Sam Johari, to a Saudi business tycoon named Sheikh Mohammed Rabbani. And what does this have to do with? Well, it has to do with Libya. And it has to do with the fact, let's remember, that the Obama administration launched this kind of strike on Libya, a strike that resulted in the end in the death of Gaddafi. And after Gaddafi went down, many countries, the United States, China, a number of European countries, froze Libyan assets. Now, Libya is an oil-rich country, so these assets were considerable, apparently totaling some $15 billion. So there's a lot of money sitting there, you may say, in the refrigerator, the global refrigerator. Enter Hunter Biden, whose dad, Joe Biden, is the vice president. And now let's follow the Johari emails to the Saudi guy, Rabbani. He goes, per phone conversation, meaning as I told you on the phone, I met with number two son, Hunter Biden. He wants $2 per year. Now, the $2 here is a euphemism. Everyone familiar with this transaction is clear. This is $2 million. Hunter Biden wants two per year. He wants $2 million per year retainer, kind of like down payment, plus success fees, meaning he wants a percentage of the money, the Libyan assets that he, Hunter Biden, is able to unfreeze. Now, he wants to hire his own people. It can be close circle of people for confidentiality. So this is going to be under wraps, probably with, you know, Joe Biden directing the operation, but that is not said. Now, what I find really funny is the way in which this email proceeds, because you can see that even these foreign guys are sort of onto the Bidens and onto specifically Hunter Biden. So this Jahari guy goes, his positives, Hunter Biden's positives, is that he is chairman of the UN World Food Program. So what he's getting at is that this being chairman of this charitable organization is going to give him global access to be able to unfreeze money. He is son of number two who has Libya file. So he's son of Joe Biden. Joe Biden's number two. He's the vice president. Access to state treasury. So he's got access to the State Department, the Treasury Department. Business partner of J. Forbes K.'s son. Now, let's pause. Who's J. Forbes K.? John F. Kerry. John Kerry's son. So John Kerry's, this, by the way, is John Kerry's son-in-law, Christopher Hines, who, by the way, one of Hunter Biden's kind of racketeering partners involved in a number of these influence-peddling schemes. So think about it. John Kerry marries into the Hines ketchup family. Guy's incredibly rich as it is, but no, the son-in-law still trying to get money on the side. And then the email continues. His negatives, this is Hunter Biden's negatives, are that he is alcoholic, drug addict, kicked out of U.S. Army for cocaine, chasing low-class hookers, and many more headaches. I love this. Many, many more headaches to come from this guy. But he might be able to unfreeze the cash. And so what you have here, and you know what is so telling about all this, is first of all, you remember the suppression of the Hunter Biden story by the media in almost coordinated fashion, backed up by censorship of digital media. Now that the laptop is verified as accurate, in fact, Politico, which basically said at one point that this was Russian disinformation. Look at the 50 intelligence officers who confirmed that. By the way, do you notice that no media outlet has gone to those 50 intelligence officers and said, hey, you know, you said it was Russian disinformation. How did you know that? What made you make such a false claim when we now know it's now been verified? A Politico reporter has published a book basically saying, I've checked out the emails by checking them with the third party. Parties that the emails were sent to that are on the laptop, and those guys go, yeah, that's Hunter Biden. He sent me the email. So the Hunter Biden laptop is now 100% verified and kosher, and yet, this kind of report, I mean, here's Jonathan Turley writing about it on jonathanturley.org, but you still find a deafening media silence. The media basically is running, you know, in the old mafia, they would have these protection guys whose job it was to protect the mafia. Well, we have a protection racket, but it's being run by the U.S. media. The media itself is in with the big guy. They're not getting a cut. But they're ideologically protecting their mafia man because their mafia man, in some ways, is ideologically or politically doing their bidding. Debbie and I decided to give up bread a while ago. We wanted to save on carbs, but boy, did we miss it. Now, this is until we tried this new bread from Uprising Food. We love to eat our avocado toast with Uprising bread every morning now. And Debbie found it has only 2 net carbs per serving, 6 grams of protein, and 9 grams of fiber. William and his team at Uprising Food have cracked the code on healthy bread. You simply can't find something this healthy that tastes this good, that's this fresh. Uprising has made prebiotic fiber delicious, and their patent-pending breakthrough in psyllium husk activation makes fantastic digestive health absurdly easy for all of us. For me, it's all about the taste, and when I find stuff that tastes great and is good for me, I'm sold. Uprising Food has absolutely nailed the taste factor. Now, Uprising is offering our listeners $10 off their starter bundle, and that includes two superfood cubes and four packs of Freedom Chips to try. Go to uprisingfood.com/Dinesh, and the discount will automatically be applied at the checkout. That's Uprising Food, uprisingfood.com/Dinesh, and get $10 off your first purchase of the starter bundle. How are we to think about the Maricopa audit? Well, one of the difficulties of being an American, an open-minded person, trying to figure out what's really going on, trying to sift through what's out there, is you get radically opposed accounts that make it very difficult to know what's really going on. Now, right before the announcement of the audit, there were triumphant articles running across the mainstream of the U.S. media declaring Maricopa audit validates a Biden win. And here's a sample article, just one sample out of, this is ABC News, basically says that nearly 11 months after Biden was elected, the GOP-led review of Arizona's Maricopa County ballots has found no substantial deviation from the vote count reported by the county that helped clinch the win for Biden. And this has produced sort of jubilation across social media. One guy on Twitter talks about Biden, quote, winning Arizona for the 11,789th time. The basic idea being, yeah, these silly Republicans want to count again and again and again and again. Hey, same result. So this is one narrative out there. And what's interesting about this narrative is it takes no note of anything else. It just repeats itself. The total count was, quote, within a few hundred of the previous total. In fact, Biden's total number goes up very slightly. Trump's number goes down very slightly. It's still basically a 10,000 vote margin of victory. But the important point is Biden wins again. Now, when you turn to the officials who did the audit, and you turn to Kelly Ward, the GOP chair in Arizona, and when you turn to Trump spokesman Liz Harrington, you get a completely different picture. I'm now just going to read a summary from Liz Harrington of the Maricopa audit and try to digest. I won't read all of it. I'm just going to read a few key points, and you can kind of digest the significance of what is being said, if true. One, 23,344 mail-in ballots from persons no longer living at that address. Problem. Let's keep in mind constantly the 10,000 margin for the whole state. For Maricopa County. 17,322 duplicate ballots, which surged after the election. So after the election, you get this surge of duplicate ballots. 2,382 voters who voted in person but had moved out of Maricopa County. They moved out, but they're voting in Maricopa County. They showed up to vote. 2,081 voters who had already moved out of state, but nevertheless still voted. 5,295 overvotes from people voting in more than one county. 282 dead voters. 9,041 mail-in voters returned more ballots than they were sent. And there's more of this. Now, Trump does a little bit of a summary in a press statement where he goes, 44,000 ballots the left wants you to ignore. He has a table in which he lists some of this data, kind of aggregates it. And he essentially says, listen, there are 44,000, at the very least, either fraudulent, disputed, anomalous, invalid, questionable ballots in an election settled by 10,000 votes. Now, all of this, by the way, which is in the Maricopa audit, is not even mentioned in the ABC News article. If you were a guy, an innocent, let's say, not following this Trump commentary, and you just read the ABC News article, or just read the articles in most of the major newspapers, you would have no idea that there were all these anomalies and problems. So, where does this kind of thing go from here? Well, here's Kelly Ward, GOP chair for Arizona, hashtag decertify, decertify the election. I don't think that's going to happen. I would be a little shocked, in fact, if that did happen. One thing that the Arizona audit has done is it's provoked other places to begin audits. By the way, Texas was clearly Republican in 2020. But even so, you can still be Republican. You can still win and they can still be fraud. And so four large Texas counties are now auditing the 2020 results. Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and also Texas are looking at widening their scope of audits. I think the issue here is, and you begin to see this with Maricopa, even if you're able to identify all these problem votes, you don't know who those voters voted for. I mean, we can make a good guess. These are most likely Biden votes, but most likely isn't the same as proof. So what you have is you have votes that could have made a difference and perhaps probably would have made a difference. But in order to decertify an election, to do it over again, to sort of pull Arizona out of the Biden camp, you have to show not just that the fraud could have occurred or that there were anomalies or even that it was probable that it occurred. You have to show that it did occur and that it did make a difference. So Biden, I think, is no matter what happens with even these other audits, here to stay. I don't think should have the illusion that in some way we're going to be able to usher this guy to the door and take him to the mental asylum where he most likely belongs. But one takeaway for me is it emphasizes, Maricopa does, and I think the other audits will too, the absolute indispensability of these election integrity laws. Why? Because however the horse was stolen the last time around, we got to lock the barn door. And by lock the barn door, I mean tighten up the procedures so that, yes, it is easy to vote, but as Governor Abbott says, hard to cheat, hard to cheat. There's plenty of reason to believe, based on what we see here in Maricopa, that a whole lot of shenanigans, a whole lot of cheating went on. What the impact of that is, we might not be able to say, but that we need to stop it and stop it now is something I think that is a clear lesson to be drawn from the Maricopa experience. Every time you or I connect to an unencrypted network in cafes, hotels, airports, etc., our online data is not secured. Any hacker on the same network can gain access to and steal your personal data, passwords, financial details, etc. It doesn't take much technical knowledge to hack someone. Just some cheap hardware is needed. A smart 12-year-old can do it. And this is why I love ExpressVPN. These guys are ingenious. They've created a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet. Hackers can't steal your sensitive data. ExpressVPN is super secure. It's also easy to use. Fire up the app, click one button, and you're protected. And it works on all devices, phones, laptops, tablets, and more, so you can stay secure on the go. Don't wait. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/Dinesh. That's expressvpn.com/Dinesh, and you can get an extra 3 months free. Once again, expressvpn.com/Dinesh. Ever since the Taliban returned to power in Afghanistan, the Biden administration has been expressing the confidence that this is going to be a new and improved Taliban. Taliban 2.0. This is a Taliban that's going to want to court the international community. They want respectability. They want recognition from the United States. They're going to be, let's just say, on their best behavior. Well, no. Here comes the Taliban Taliban leader, Mullah Nuruddin Turabi. This guy, by the way, has a great title, a title I'd actually like to have in America. He is the head of the Ministry of the Propagation of Virtue and the Prevention of Vice. And he says that, it's time to bring back the charming Islamic practice of chopping off limbs, cutting off hands and legs. And he's kind of firm about it. He goes, no one will tell us what our laws should be. We will follow Islam and we will make our laws on the Quran. And then he gets a little bit explicit. He goes, cutting off hands is very necessary for security. I think what he means is, I kind of agree with him here. He basically says that if someone commits a theft and you chop off his arm, he's not likely to do it again. Or if he does it a second time, you chop off the second arm. I mean, basically, you have, let's just call it, you have up to four options. Because after that, you don't have any arms and you don't have any legs. You're basically just a human middle with no arms and no legs. And let's just say, if you're in that condition, you're not going to be doing any more burglaries, are you? So the Taliban is going for it. And the clear proof that they're not just talking about it. Here we go. This is an article from the Epoch Times. Taliban hangs four bodies in public square in western Afghanistan, witnesses. And they're quoting Afghans. These are residents of Herat province. And they see these Afghans dangling, in one case, from a crane. So the Taliban put up a crane. There's a guy hanging from it. And the Taliban puts out a statement. They admit it. The aim of this action is to alert all criminals that they are not safe. Let's just say that these guys are tough on crime. And their manual is the Quran itself. So now, the State Department, of course, is a little embarrassed about all this, because with every such action, the Taliban show that they are, in fact, the Taliban. This is kind of like a rattlesnake coming to the amazing discovery that it's a rattlesnake after all. And yet, here's Ned Price, State Department goofball. He goes, amputations and executions, quote, would constitute clear, gross abuses of human rights. Thank you for telling us. And we stand firm. I love this. We stand firm, as if this is sort of some kind of a, you know, this is kind of a line of teenagers all standing firm, with the international community to hold perpetrators accountable. Once again, my question is, how? How are you going to hold perpetrators accountable? Are you going to reduce the amount of foreign aid you give them? Are you going to leave less military vehicles behind next time? If there ever is a next time? You know, this is all on Biden. And for me, the tragedy of what's happened in Afghanistan, look, Afghanistan has had these barbaric practices in the past, but before they always had them. They didn't know any better. This was sort of life in a tribal, primitive, 7th century kind of Islamic fundamentalist society. But interestingly, Afghanistan has had a whiff, a taste of the past 20 years of freedom. And so they've known what a different way of life looks like. And now they are regressing to the old way of life. They are descending, in a sense, into the barbarism from which we had all too temporarily rescued them. If inflation is the problem, Birch Gold has the solution. Now, in the recent budget proposal, the White House Budget Office forecast inflation for this year at 2.1%. Now, in June alone, the actual inflation rate, 5.4%. The point? Inflation's here. It's coming faster than our government is prepared for. And their solution is to stick their heads in the sand. Well, don't stick your head in the sand. Hedge your savings against inflation by diversifying into gold and silver with Birch Gold Group. If you haven't reached out to Birch Gold to diversify part of your IRA or 401k into a precious metals IRA, do it today. I buy my gold from Birch Gold. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, and thousands of happy customers. Talk to them. Have them help you safeguard your investments. Text Dinesh to 484848 to claim your free information kit and to speak with a precious metals expert on holding gold and silver in a tax-sheltered account. Again, text Dinesh to 484848 and protect your savings today. Really happy to welcome to the podcast Thomas Spence. Thomas Spence is the president of Regnery Publishing in Washington, D.C., the country's leading conservative publishing house. I've published a number of my books with Regnery. I've had a great working relationship with them. Now, Tom Spence is a graduate of Dartmouth College, my class, 1983, although we didn't know each other at Dartmouth. He holds a master's degree in history from Harvard, a law degree from the University of Chicago. Tom, you've welcome to the podcast. You published a very eye-opening op-ed in which you talk about the irony and the hypocrisy of Banned Books Week. So the ABA, which I guess is the American Booksellers Association, in conjunction with the Library Association and PEN America, they have this banned books week. And I guess in normal years, we say, oh yes, we remember when Ulysses was banned in 1907, right? We remember the sort of the history of book banning in America. Mm-hmm. We obviously can look around the world and see that there's censorship going on. But we're living in a moment, you say, in which book banning is happening right under our very noses, and the ABA is not saying a word about it. So tell us a little bit about what you mean.
Sure. So Banned Books Week, which has just started, is a an annual promotion in public libraries and bookstores. And it's been going on since the early 80s. It's always been a bit of an eye roller in that by banned books, they don't mean books that have been banned, books that, you know, that you can't buy, that some authority has prevented people from buying. Like, I suppose the most banned book of all time is the Bible. And you will not find that featured in Banned Books Week. These are books, for the most part, it's always been this way that, you know, some book on a sexually charged subject, some new aspect of the sexual revolution that parents somewhere don't want in their elementary school library, something like that, which they call being challenged. So Banned Books Week has always been about promoting books that most of them are huge bestsellers that you know, have not really been banned, that are, well, this year, I argue in my op-ed, for the first time in this country, at least I'd say in our lifetimes, there really is some book banning going on, or at least the beginnings of it. By banning, I mean a book is generally unavailable to those who want it. You know,
yeah.
It's not just that it's not in my elementary school library, but I can go to Barnes and Noble and find it. Right. So the examples I give are two of our own authors, two Regnery authors, Abigail Schreier and Alex Berenson. There's another one who comes to mind, that's Ryan Anderson, whose book, When Harry Became Sally, it's about the transgender phenomenon, a book that is, you know, a very measured, temperate treatment of that subject. And
also, if I may jump in, Tom, yeah. Even with Abigail Schreier's book, am I correctly stating her position when she says, listen, if you're an adult and you think you belong to the wrong gender, you want to go into some sort of transition, you know, be my guest. What she's talking about is the transgender propaganda being forced upon very typically younger, in some cases, teenage girls, in which their normal adolescent self-doubt is somehow manipulated to make them think that they are somehow in the wrong body. Isn't this the thrust of her critique?
That is. And she says, you know, maybe we should not take a scalpel or chemicals to these girls. So yeah, hers is it's a very narrow critique. Ryan's is a little bit broader, but Ryan Anderson's book, When Harry Became Sally, was removed from Amazon last year. Abigail Schreier's book, which is called Irreversible Damage, was the subject of a petition by a group of Amazon employees. The group is called Glamazon. And they petitioned their company to remove the book from Amazon.com. This petition went, we were told by sources at Amazon, all the way to the top. And ultimately, Amazon decided not to remove Abigail's book, which we were grateful for, a decision that differed, say, from Target, which removed her book from its website. Nevertheless, that book was, which is a very serious treatment of an important subject, was the subject of a kind of secret inquisition. I mean, it was basically on trial for its life. This is another part of my argument, is that Amazon is something new in human history, certainly in the history of publishing. And Amazon's been very good for Regnery and other independent or conservative publishers in that it allows, with Amazon there, our books can be presented to every reader on earth. And if, as you know, the book industry tends to be fairly liberal, to put it mildly, and there are lots of buyers at the at bookstores, independents and chains who aren't terribly welcoming to our point of view. That's always been an obstacle. Now with Amazon, no problem. The flip side of that, or the other edge of this double-edged sword, is that if Amazon were to refuse to carry a book, then suddenly it's not available to where most people want to go to buy their books, right? Amazon is not the only place to buy a book. You can still get your hands on Ryan Anderson's book, for example, but it's not easy, and people aren't going to know about it.
So, I mean, Amazon builds itself as Earth's biggest bookstore, don't they? And
right.
You know, yeah. Let me ask you about this. You talk about the ABA, the Booksellers Association's so-called white box program, which is a kind of mailing of review copies to bookstores. And so Irreversible Damage, Abigail Schreier's book, was mailed out to these bookstores. And you described the reaction of somebody, of one of the bookstore people on Twitter. Talk about that, because I think it reveals this kind of tyrannical book banning mindset that is driving this whole movement.
Exactly. Yeah. So with the white box program, a publisher pays a fee to the ABA and they will mail your book to the it's 750 independent bookstore members. And we sent out the new paperback edition of Irreversible Damage because it's, again, these are people that it's hard to get our books in front of. So we thought, well, let's try it. And actually, some of the people who have written favorable things about Irreversible Damage are not whom you would expect. There's a lot of feminists who think that turning women into men isn't really a feminist goal, right? anyway, we sent it, and one of the first people to open it up was an employee at a bookstore in Brooklyn. She was confronted suddenly, maybe for the first time in her life, I don't know, but she was confronted by an argument that contradicted her deeply held beliefs. How's a person supposed to deal with that first thing on a Monday? So she did what everybody now does when one is deeply offended, go to Twitter. And so she tweeted out to the world this horribly offensive thing that the ABA had done to her. And within hours, the American Booksellers Association, co-sponsor of Banned Books Week, issued a craven apology, for which they said that sending that book out was an act of violence and inexcusable. And later on, they issued another apology, which said there was, it was unforgivable what they did. They were so sorry. They showed this book to booksellers. So if that doesn't speak volumes, I don't know what does.
Tom, thank you for joining me to share this this message. It seems to me so creepy that here in America, something that we probably, you and I in our Dartmouth days, took for granted, whether the country moves left or right, we protect the principle of free speech. But even that principle now is in jeopardy. Thanks for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me, Dinesh.
Just a few weeks ago, one of America's leading nonprofit law firms, the First Liberty Institute, asked patriots like you to sign their letter to help stop President Biden's radical scheme to pack the U.S. Supreme Court. Now, since then, 250,000 people have signed, with tens of thousands joining their coalition every day. Franklin Graham, former U.S. Attorney General Ed Meese, Dr. James Dobson, the Family Policy Alliance, the Heritage Foundation, they're all on board. But we only have until September 29 to include your name before this goes off to the Biden Commission. Look, if we don't stop the radical left from installing four more justices so they can rig the system in their favor, it will end the rule of law as we know it in America. Please sign your name now, like Debbie and I have. Go to SupremeCoup, that's COUP.com, to sign First Liberty's letter. Once again, that's SupremeCoup.com, and may God bless America. You know, the job of a judge is to enforce the law, and to enforce the law even-handedly. What we don't need is for judges to be psychologists, moralists, public scolds. And even going back to my own case, you know, my judge, Richard Berman, I mean, a pompous ass, guy who's sort of, Mr. D'Souza, I wonder what made you do it. I'm like, well, I gave money to a college friend. Well, I wonder what was going on in your psyche, a successful man, intelligent man like you to commit a crime like this. And this is, of course, the basis on which this clown sentenced me to psychiatric counseling. Now, I'm thinking of all this because the judges in D.C., and by the way, this is some of these are Republican judges. I'm about to talk about a George W. Bush appointee named Reggie Walton, because in sentencing a January 6th defendant, this is a defendant who, as we will see, his name is Anthony Mariotto, did basically nothing. And yet the judge is giving him a major tongue lashing. Now, this is a guy who pleaded guilty to a misdemeanor. Basically, he shouldn't have been in the Capitol, and he was. So it's a misdemeanor charge. But listen to this sort of over-the-top rhetoric from the judge. This is Judge Reggie Walton. You've disgraced this country in the eyes of the world. So this is one guy walking in the Capitol. He's disgraced the country in the eyes of the world. And then the judge goes, I find it outrageous that American citizens would do what you did. So you'd better walk the straight and narrow, sir. Do you understand? And the guy goes, yeah, I do, Your Honor. Hopefully, like me, he was laughing inside. You know, it's normal in a sentencing for the judge to ask routine questions like, do you regret what you did? I mean, that stuff is okay. But listen to this. I have real concerns about what you and other people did. It was an attack on our government. And I love my government. This government has been good to me. Yeah, lifetime pension. This guy's sitting around, you know, basically ordering people around to see somebody destroy or try to destroy the Capitol. Wait, who was trying to destroy the Capitol? By the way, if this group of people wanted to destroy the Capitol, they could have. They could have done what Antifa does, or BLM. They could have knocked everything down, set things on fire. They didn't do any of that. They weren't trying to destroy the Capitol, you blockhead. And he goes on. He goes, this guy, Walton, goes, he travels overseas. And he says he sometimes talks to government officials abroad about judicial issues. Now he says, his task of portraying the American system of justice is more complicated. It's almost like this guy has sort of made Judge Walton's job more difficult. Quote, America was not great on that day. And I'm sure when I go to other jurisdictions to say how they can be like America, they'll say, why should I want to be like America when you are all trying to tear down your own country? As if, first of all, no foreigner is so dumb as to say this. This is all imaginary conversation. What if someone were to say to me, why were those people trying to overthrow the Capitol? I find it very troubling. And then the stupidest statement of all, what if the next time around the Democrats lose the presidency and start a riot? Frankly, if the Democrats, first of all, they tried to do that in 2016. They did start a riot when they lost it. So this guy's obviously erased that from his memory. You know, he's kind of going full Biden on us. What if this happens in the future? Well, it already did. I guess you think that would be all right in light of what you did. And so Mariotto says no. Now, the important thing here is, what did this Mariotto guy do to earn this kind of all these pompous proclamations? Well, he got in the building, but he's not accused of committing any violence or property damage. In fact, one of the charges was illegally remaining in the congressional gallery, where he apparently took a smiling selfie. But the prosecutors dropped even that charge. And the only thing that he pleaded guilty to was, quote, parading in the Capitol. Can you believe this? There's a charge called parading in the Capitol. I'm on a parade. And so, what we see here is the gross discrepancy of treatment. This is a guy, okay, he shouldn't have been there. He deserves a slap on the wrist. Give him one. But spare him all this pompous talk about overthrowing the government. He didn't try to do that. And he probably poses a smaller danger to our system of government than one Reggie Walton. Debbie and I just can't stop ordering MyPillow towels. We've replaced all the towels in our house with MyPillow towels, but now Mike Lindell has a special we can't pass up, so we're kind of going crazy and ordering more. You just can't have too many towels. Now, ordinary towels just don't seem to dry you anymore. They feel soft and lotiony in the store, but when you take them home, they don't absorb. Why not? Because towel companies typically import the product and then they add softeners that make the towels feel good, but they don't dry you very well. Now, Mike Lindell has solved this problem. He created the best towel company right here in the USA. MyPillow has proprietary technology to create towels that not only feel soft, but actually absorb and leave you feeling fresh and dry. MyPillow towels come with the MyPillow 60-day money-back guarantee. For a limited time, Mike Lindell is offering a ridiculously good deal on his 6-piece towel set, which includes 2 bath towels, 2 hand towels, and 2 washcloths, all made with USA cotton, soft yet absorbent, regularly $109.99. Now, $39.99. It's a great deal. Call 800-876-0227 or go to MyPillow.com to get the discount. You got to use promo code Dinesh. I got to say, I really like the Salvation Army, a fantastic charity that does an incredible amount of good work. I've given before to the Salvation Army. I believe in their mission, and I believe in the Christian inspiration that drives it. There's a funny scene now from some years ago when Joan Kroc, this is the widow of Ray Kroc, the guy who started McDonald's, and Joan Kroc donated $1 billion. This was her largest gift in the period leading up to her death to the Salvation Army. And then I saw some guy from the Salvation Army on a local channel in San Diego. Joan Kroc lived in San Diego. And the guy goes, "I can't believe it. Joan Kroc has given us $1 million. No, it wasn't $1 million. It was $1 billion. But anyway, point out, all of this comes to mind now that I'm reading, and I had Christian Watson on the show yesterday or the day before to talk about the Salvation Army, but I'm reading their study guide on racism. This is to explore the question of whether the Salvation Army has gone woke, and overall, the study guide isn't that bad, but what really strikes me about it is kind of how dumb it is. One kind of problematic statement after another, and I just want to read a few to give you an idea of how no thinking has gone into this document, or they have lifted it from critical race theorists who are not really even capable of clear thinking at all. Here we go. Quote, "Racial discrimination can take many expressions." Okay, what are they? Quote, "including tribalism, casteism, and ethnocentrism." Wait a minute. None of those three things have anything to do with race. They're not racial discrimination at all. Let's look at it. Tribalism. The Hutu and the Tutsi are fighting in Rwanda. Same race. So they're a different tribe, but they're not a different race. Casteism. India. 4 castes. The Brahmin, the Kshatriya, the Vaishya, the Shudra. But all the Indians are the same race. They're all Asian Indians, after all. So this is not racial discrimination. Yeah, it's discrimination. It's caste-based discrimination. Yeah, it is hereditary, but it has nothing to do with race. Ethnocentrism. Anthropologists tell us that every culture has a certain kind of inbuilt preference for one's own, and a little bit of a suspicion, at least a kind of wary approach toward foreigners. So ethnocentrism is a universal condition of each group preferring its own. Again, it very often has nothing to do with race. Ethnocentrism can be based upon family. It can be based upon neighborhood. It can be based upon religion, but the one thing it is typically not based upon is race. So there's a confusion of categories here. Let's go on to another statement. Genetically, says the Salvation Army, and biologically, Anglo-Saxons, Asians, Africans, Latinos, etc., are identical. First of all, half of these groups aren't races, you know? Anglo-Saxon may be a kind of quasi-racial category. Asian is a continental category, which has different racial groups. Asian Indians are different from Chinese. We're a continent, not a race. Africans, South Africans, a lot of white South Africans, Latinos. Latinos are joined by and large by speaking the Spanish language and having hereditary roots in Spain, but of course with all kinds of different mixed race mixtures thrown in there. To claim that genetically these groups are identical is just an idiotic statement. First of all, even among races, there are in fact genetic and biological differences. If there weren't any differences between races, the races would be identical. You wouldn't be able to tell one from the other. The very fact that we can identify races shows that there obviously is some biological difference. And then the Salvation Army goes complete cuckoo on us by saying things like this. It is quite certain... Not possible. It's quite certain that in a mysterious way, we shall retain our ethnic identities in heaven. What? Wait a minute. Are they saying that by and large, when we get to heaven and we have spiritual bodies, we will be able to identify? Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. You're from the Congo. You're Latinx. Man, Dinesh, I'm a little surprised to see that you're the only Indian in heaven. Where are the other Indians? Are they in the other place? Let's look down there. So, first of all, what is the basis of these idiotic statements, Salvation Army? What have you become? The poor man's anthropologist, but the poor man's theologian. I think it's better to just focus on the bell. I think it's better to back up. Sure. Just focus on doing good works. You're doing a lot of good stuff with the homeless. You know, in a non-discriminatory way, you help all comers. This is a great mission. It reflects, I would call it active faith. So Christ's love pouring out through action. It's great stuff you're doing. Do that. And stay away from all this other nonsense. It is really unbecoming of you. Several weeks ago, I was approached by PragerU about making a series of videos on the American founding. I was very excited about this. Now, I've had a very good experience with PragerU. I've done several videos for them. One of them, if you want to go back and watch, on the intellectual founder of fascism, Giovanni Gentile. It's very clear as you watch that video, you can clearly understand how fascism came out of Marxism. It came out of the left. Gentile was a Marxist. Debbie has done two videos for PragerU, both on Venezuela. And the first one, honey, you have over 30 million views. So this is I love the fact that PragerU gets these videos to a very wide audience and also to an audience of young people. Now, the reason that I was excited about the idea of doing the founding, and I felt honored to be chosen by them to do this, is the American founding is a very unique event in history. First of all, most countries don't have a founding. They're the result of, well, you could just call it accident and conquest. Their borders are determined by that. But America is the product, I think it was Hamilton who said, of reflection and choice. So this is a group of people who sat around a table and basically devised the blueprint for a new society. And to talk about the ideas of these men, but not just the ideas in the abstract sense, the philosophical statesmanship that converted the ideas into a constitution, into a recipe for an actual existing society. And this is a revolution, the American Revolution, that has lasted, that has proven to be a success. Contrast the American Revolution with all the failed revolutions in the world. Spectacular failure. The French Revolution, which failed when it installed a reign of terror, and in comes Napoleon Bonaparte as the emperor. The Russian Revolution, what a disaster, what a mountain of bodies. The Chinese, the Cultural Revolution that Mao unleashed. Also destructive, horrific. So constitutions of different countries come and go. Some constitutions have lasted a year, 6 months, but the American Constitution has been enduring. So on the one hand, America represents a kind of great triumph. But to be a great triumph and to have lasted 200 years doesn't mean you're going to last forever. We're living at a time when the fate of the American experiment is unclear. And we are not wrong to ask, are these founding principles even relevant? Are they even applicable today? We as conservatives want to conserve, but conserve what? The world of the founding, and perhaps even the ideas of the founding, seem so remote, so distant. What possible legitimacy could they have in 21st century America? That world was distant in time. The founding was an agricultural society. It was distant in size. The population then around 4 million, now over 300 million. Obviously, we've seen massive changes in technology. But most importantly, we've seen a kind of progressive assault on the founding that's been going on for almost 100 years. It began kind of in the Woodrow Wilson era. And so what's left of the American founding? Well, the good thing about these videos that I've made is that they address this. They address the relevance of the founding. Now, I decided to focus on five founders. And rather than try to do a kind of full treatment, which would be impossible in the kind of condensed format that PragerU uses, I decided to focus on each founder and the one issue that they are most closely associated with. So here's my menu. I did Thomas Jefferson and the issue of equality, Alexander Hamilton and the issue of capitalism, Madison, James Madison and the issue of rights, John Adams and the issue of virtue, and finally, Ben Franklin and the issue of the self-made man. And together, these videos are intended not just to be kind of vivid individual portraits of these men, but to give a kind of comprehensive picture of together what they meant, together the kind of concentration of ingenuity and experience and talent that they represented in creating this new type of society. Now, you'll notice that I left out George Washington. Why? In part because George Washington was a hero of, well, I'm going to call it of the earlier American Revolution. We forget there were sort of two American revolutions. There was the revolution of breaking away from the British. Let's call that the Revolution of 1776. Washington was the hero of that revolution. But there was a second revolution, and this was the revolution that gave us the Constitution, gave us the Bill of Rights. This is the Revolution of 1789. And this second revolution is the revolution that I focus on, because this represented what PragerU, I think, is accurately calling the making of America. Now, over the next week, maybe 2 weeks, I'm going to delve into some of these individual founders in some detail. I'm going to give you a feeling for what they were really like and what was important about their thought. But in order to do that, you got to go watch those PragerU videos. Prager's going to release all the videos today at different times today, and you can find it on social media. You can find it on YouTube. You can find it on Facebook. There's going to be five videos dropping today. You don't have to watch them all at one time, but you can. But if you want to start with Thomas Jefferson. Why? Because I'm going to start with Thomas Jefferson. I'm going to go in the order of Jefferson first. I'm going to talk about Jefferson for a couple of days, then Hamilton, then Madison, then Adams, and finally Franklin. So it's kind of an intellectual tour de horizon, a kind of journey through the ideas of the American founding. And I think this will fortify you and equip you, give you a better understanding of what is this American exceptionalism that we as conservatives defend. It's time to learn and learn in an enjoyable way. PragerU does a great job of the way they put these videos out. So watch them, and then let's pick it up on the podcast starting tomorrow.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
with in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.